Welcome to Yoga with Subhash. I am pleased to present an audio recording of the workshop on the essential message of Ramayana that I presented on Sunday, October 17th, to the students who are undergoing the 500-hour yoga teachers training program at the Yoga Garden Studio in Apex. Unfortunately, this contains only the first hour of the presentation, as I forgot to turn the recorder on for the second hour. But you can go to the PowerPoint slides for more details. I hope you will enjoy this presentation, and I would look forward to hearing back from you with your feedback or questions or comments. You know, they say that in the Hindu culture, there are three gods, right? Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva or Mahesh. Now, these three gods are responsible for the creation of the universe, sustaining the universe, and finally dissolving it back to its source. So Brahma is considered responsible for creating the universe. Vishnu is the one who is supposed to be sustaining it, okay, and keep it running basically. And then Shiva or Mahesh, they have multiple names, each one of them. You know, he is responsible for eventually dissolving it back to its original state of oneness or nothingness, whichever way you want to look at it. And then there are, you know, all these people, like Rama and Krishna, etc., and there are Buddha also. They are all considered the incarnations of Vishnu in different time frames. And Vishnu has had 10 incarnations, they say. So Rama is one of those 10. Okay. So because of that belief, he is revered and worshipped as a god by a lot of people in India. In fact, in every town, every street, there is going to be a temple in India. And almost everywhere there will be a Rama temple. And then somewhere near there, there will be a Hanuman temple as well. So Hanuman has his own following. There are people who follow Hanuman all the way. They consider him there as their personal god. And then there are people who consider Rama. A lot of people do that. So there's a huge following. So Rama is considered a personal god by a lot of people. Okay, so the text itself was originally obviously written in Sanskrit language, which is what the language used for everything that was given to us. All the yoga texts, all the Vedas, Puranas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, everything was originally written in Sanskrit. And then subsequently, a lot of versions have evolved. You know, people have written many different versions in their own native languages. So, for example, in the north, you know, there is a version which has become extremely popular now. It was by a saint called Tulsidas. That's his name in the north, where I come from. So, for example, you know, whenever I visited my grandmother, which I did every year during the summer months, 2 months, my summertime was always spent with my grandmother. So her routine every morning was to wake up at about 4:30, you know, do her morning duties, go to the temple, which was not too far from her house, go to the temple, do whatever worship she did there. It was a ritual there. Okay, and then she came back, and then she would set up a little stool in front, which was specifically only meant for Ramayana. And there will be a fresh, you know, when she goes to the temple, she'll buy a fresh garland of flowers, which goes on that little tripod for the Ramayana. And then she'll put a little, there was a picture of Rama and Sita on that, and then put a little red dot on their forehead, which is a very symbolic thing in every Indian culture. And then she would sit down, and before that she would wake me up, because I was there, she would say, "Sit down with me, we'll read Ramayana now." So every morning it was a ritual that she would read a half hour of Ramayana. And this happens in, it still happens in multiple families, you know, or large number of families in India. In fact, there is a tradition where they actually chant Ramayana continuously. It's called Akhanda Ramayana. That's the Sanskrit name for that. Akhanda means unbroken. Okay? So unbroken Ramayana is chanted by a lot of people. You can do that in individual homes, or you can do that in a big hall, you know, whatever works for you. When people do that in their homes, they invite all their friends, neighbors, relatives, everybody. Okay? They'll come there and they will keep chanting. At least two people are identified as the chanters at any given time. It can take anywhere from 24 to 36 hours to finish the reading of the Ramayana. Okay? And the host will offer everybody tea, coffee, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything. It's just customary. You go there, have all that, chant, and then, you know, if you want to sleep, they will provide, you know, on the floor, you know, just some blankets and all. You sleep there, sleep for 2 hours, get up and start chanting again. Resume it. It's very common. So it takes 24 hours usually, but some people are, you know, singers who can sing it a little slower, and they enjoy that. So they take longer. It's okay. They really enjoy it. Okay, so that's called the Akhanda part. Akhanda means unbroken chanting of Ramayana. Okay, and it's a very beautiful event, you know, when the people do that. All right. So, she just mentioned about Rama Navami. Rama Navami is a day when Rama was born. Navami means ninth. That's the literal meaning of the word. It means that he was born on the ninth day of the lunar month, and that's the day when it's huge celebration in India, everywhere. Big celebration. And then this whole battle that was fought between Rama and Ravana, that is celebrated as a Ravana killing ceremony, and then they make as big a kind of a, what do you call it? Can't call it a statue, but effigy or something. And, you know, the bigger you make it, the bigger is your name in the newspapers. So some people make the effigy almost like 80, 90, 100 feet high, maybe even higher sometimes. So if you go to India, you know, there is a big field there. It's called Ram Leela Maidan. You know, so that's where they perform this whole festival, the 12 days, Ram Leela, etc. And on the final day, they erect this effigy, and this one is almost like 250 feet high. Wow. And then they burn that. That's the symbolic effigy of Ravana to celebrate that killing of. And then it has become such a popular thing, you know, it has been presented in many movies, TV serials, etc., etc. So when this serial was going on, I happened to visit India at that time from here, you know. And everything, literally everything comes to a dead stop. You cannot find a taxi, you cannot find an auto rickshaw, you cannot find a bus to go anywhere. If you're sick, you've been bad luck. That's it. And everything came to a dead stop. Everybody was glued to their TV. And because at that time, this was in the 80s, okay, at that time not everyone had TV in the houses, so it was considered an honor to be able to invite all your neighbors and friends so that they could come and sit and cramp in your living room and watch TV. And for that half hour, no movement. All the sports games would be delayed, all the trains would be delayed, everything, flights would be delayed. It was amazing. Okay. So because of all these, you know, Ramalila stories, everyone knows that. So almost everyone is familiar with this story to some extent. Yeah. Maybe not everyone reads the whole thing, but they all know the story. So it's, the background I have given here is that there was this poet who wrote this is Valmiki. Everyone knows that, right? That's the name of this poet. And he asked sage Narada if he knows of a person who is perfect, who can be defined as a perfect human being. So, you know, you can read this, the statement here. Anybody, you want to read that?
Me?
Yeah, go ahead, read it aloud so that we can know what he asked for.
Of adorable and admirable character, of great valor, of acute discernment about right and wrong, that appreciates, remembers, and grateful for the help received from everyone, that stands by his word all the time and pursues his goals to their completion unswervingly, who is a man of proven record and reputation, who always wishes and does good to all beings, who is well-read about all aspects of life, who is capable of getting the most challenging things done, who is always also approachable, personable, and pleasing to all alike at all times, who is a person of exemplary courage, in complete control of his temperament, of great intellect, that is unbiased, that doesn't indulge in slander, and whose displeasure would be taken note by even the gods.
Okay, so you can see, you know, that you can't get any better than that, right? That tells everything. So that's the question he asked. So then when he tells that, then Valmiki, you know, he said, okay, I will write about this guy. But what happens, you know, this guy Valmiki was sitting in a forest. That's where they lived, all the forests and all them. So he heard some, you know, shots in the air, etc. Some hunter came and killed two birds, love birds they call them in India. They're always together in pairs. So he killed one of them, and he was very shocked and absolutely, impromptu. He created a verse, a song, a poem in the at that moment, and it was done in a meter, you know, proper meter. It's called Anushtup Chanda. That's the name of that meter, and eventually he decided to write this whole Ramayana in the same meter. Because the meter was very beautiful and very appropriate, so the whole Ramayana is written in that meter. It's called Anushtup. If you recall, Bhagavad Gita also uses the same meter. In fact, the entire Mahabharata uses the same meter. For about 80-85% of Mahabharata, the same meter is used. There, of course, in Mahabharata, there's another meter which is also commonly used, which is called Trishtupa. But in Ramayana, this is the only meter throughout, the entire Ramayana, okay, which is 24,000 verses. The entire Ramayana is composed of 24,000 verses. Of course, it says Mahabharata has more than 100,000 verses. Okay, so that's why 24,000 verses, to chant that, you take more than 24 hours of the day. All right. So this meter is very beautiful. You know, I've picked the rules of this chanda, of this meter. And, there's no reason to go through these rules. But the beauty of this is that every single verse follows these rules absolutely to the dot. There's no variant. You cannot find a variant in any one of the 24,000 verses to this rule. And they are so strictly followed. And then people have, they start singing. When they sing it, it's sung in a certain manner. And of course, there are different tunes people give, but the most common is the one that I have given on the next page. I've just picked the same verse, which is the question that we asked earlier: who is that person who is perfect and all that. So I just picked that verse because we've read about it earlier. So the way they sing it, most commonly, I'll just sing that this particular verse, which is in Sanskrit here. And it's the same thing, like I said, okay? So the way they go is, Konvasmin sampratam loke gunavan kascha viryavan dharmagnyascha kritagnyascha satyavako dridhavratah. Okay, so that's how they sing. Now they will sing this entire Ramayana in the same verse. It becomes purely meditative once you do it a few times. Okay, very meditative. And that's why it takes more than 24 hours. If you do it at this speed, it'll take even longer. Okay, it's the same verse which is where Valmiki asks that question, who is the perfect man? Okay. So now coming to the story of this Ramayana, and I'm sure you know most of it, but you know, we'll just go through the whole thing. If you have any questions, you can ask. And but you roughly know the story, right, all of you? You know this roughly.
Roughly.
Yeah. So you know, we'll just go through it, even though. Even though it might sound like a repetition, but we'll just go through it quickly. Okay, so there are seven chapters, as we mentioned, seven chapters. Each kind of chapter represents a period of his life. So the first one is it's called the Bala. Bala means a child. So the childhood Kanda is a chapter. Kanda. The word there is Kanda. So Bala Kanda is the childhood of Rama. So the story goes, maybe I'll just list these and then, at a later time I have more details of this. So I think that's what we'll do. So let's just list these. So the Balakanda or the childhood story is just about how the story of Rama's birth and all that, and how all his brothers, how they were born, etc., etc. Then Ayodhya Kanda is when his father Dasharatha, he decides to hand over the kingdom to Rama. Okay, and that's where all this manipulation by his wife Kaikeyi happens and all that, and this is how they decide, this is when they decide that he should go to the forest for all these years. Alright? So, that's called the Ayodhya Kanda. Ayodhya was the name of the, what was Ayodhya?
The tree.
Come on.
Is it the place?
That's the place. Yeah. He was the king of Ayodhya. Ayodhya was the name of that kingdom, right? It's the name of a city, but that's like the capital of that whole area, Ayodhya. And he was a king there. That's Ayodhya. All right? So that's the Ayodhya Kanda, where the decision to send him to the forest. All right. The Aranya Kanda is finally when they reach the forest, that whole story of how they spend their life in the forest and how Sita was kidnapped by this demon king Ravana. So that's all that story is in this Aranya. Aranya means a forest. The word Aranya in Sanskrit means a forest. So it's the book of the chapter on forest life. Then Kishkindha Kanda. Kishkindha was the name of a place where he meets these monkey, the clan. Okay, so that's where he befriends this guy, Monkey King. Okay, and so we'll talk about that. That whole that's called the Kishkindha Kanda. Kishkindha means again the name of a place. Okay? Kishkindha. The next chapter is called Sundara Kanda. Sundar Kanda. Again, there are two interpretations why that name Sundar is given. Sundar means beautiful. That's just the meaning of, literal meaning of the word Sundar means beautiful. But the two reasons given is the name of the garden in which Sita was kept captive. That garden's name was Sundar Garden, Sundarvana. Okay, that's one meaning, one interpretation of why it's called Sundara Kanda, Sundar chapter. Okay, so one meaning is because that garden in which Sita was kept captive, that was named Sundar Vana. Vana means garden, basically. And the second meaning is, or the second interpretation is that Hanuman, you know, this monkey warrior Hanuman, his childhood nickname was Sundar. His mother used to call him that. So, and because he is the one who identified where Sita was and all that, so they call it this Sundar Kanda. Anyway, that's just a matter of interpretation. The text itself doesn't say why it was named this way. And of course, then we go to the Yuddha. Yuddha means a war, battle. Okay, so the Yuddha Kanda is the chapter where they describe all the fierce war that takes place between Rama and Ravana, and how all the Ravana's family and Ravana himself are killed, etc. And then Uttara Kanda is the, Uttara means the subsequent or later part. So Uttara Kanda is the last book. And that is where they show how Rama ruled after, you know, being given his kingdom back, and how good a ruler he was. But then finally also he abandons Sita because, you know, we know the story, right? You remember the story? We'll go through it if you don't. All right, so he abandons Sita, where she goes to a forest, lives with Valmiki, and that's where she gives birth to her two sons, and eventually they get back together. I mean, the sons get back together. Sita never does. You know that, right? Okay. So now we'll go through some more details of each one of these chapters. Is that okay? And like I said, if you have questions, please ask. So the name of the king was Dasharatha. That was the name of the king of Ayodhya. Okay, Ayodhya was the kingdom, the name of the city or the capital city of that area. And he had three wives. The names were Kaushalya, Sumitra, and Kaikeyi. Alright. Now, he was childless, basically. He did not have a child, and that's why he was very, very sad. Because if you don't have a child, then who will take over the kingdom as your heir? So, he performed this huge sacrificial ritual, requesting the gods to grant him a child. And these rituals, you know, these sacrificial rituals were very huge affairs. You know, they would invite all the people and then give away tons of their money and their possessions away so that, you know, God will be happy eventually. And then they have to meditate for a long, long time so that the gods will appear and then give him a child. So that's what happened. He went through this whole sacrificial ritual, and finally he got a boon from the gods that, yes, you will get sons. All right. So what he said was, what they did was, they gave him a bowl of some liquid. All right. So it is called kheer, basically, which is made out of milk or something. So the deal was that he should give this milk to his wives, and then they will give birth to kids. So that's what he did. And then finally, all three of them had children. Kaushalya gave birth to Rama. She was the oldest. Kaikeyi gave birth to Bharat. And the youngest, Sumitra, she gave birth to Lakshman and Shatrughna. All right, so these are the four sons of Dasharatha: Rama,
Lakshman,
Lakshmana, and the other two, Shatrughna, and number four, Bharat. So Rama, Lakshmana, Shatrughna, and Bharat. So the four sons that were born. And like I said, he was considered, Rama was considered the seventh incarnation of Lord Vishnu. And the reason he was born, that he was given birth, the reason they agreed to give Dasharatha this boon is because Ravana, the demon king, had started creating a lot of problem on this earth. He was becoming a terror, you know, in some ways, to all these good people. Right, so they said, you know, we need to get rid of this demon king Ravana, and so we'll allow Vishnu to take an incarnation as a birth of Rama, so that he can eventually go and do that. So that's what the whole story is. Okay, and Rama, of course, was the most talented, most gifted in every activity, every sphere. All right. So they grow up, okay, and then you know, each family had, you know, one of their main sages, one of the main priests, so you can say. So Vishwamitra was one of the very well-known family priests, sage Vishwamitra. And he was being troubled by all these bad guys, the demons, in all his rituals. When he was, they lived in forest, right, these sages. So whenever he would do a ritual to worship and all that, these demons would come and disturb that ritual. Okay, so it was becoming a big deal, you know, they could not perform any of their rituals properly. So he came and request Dasharatha that, you know, why don't you send your sons so that they can fight these demons. Now, at that time, of course, they were young, they were maybe in their teens or whatever, you know. So Dasharatha was very, very hesitant in sending them, because they're young and they're still under training and they're still learning everything. He was not sure that they can do the job, and he was afraid that they might be killed in this whole process. But then finally, Vishwamitra was able to convince him that it's okay, you know, I'll take care of them. But and of course, it turns out that they were extremely brave and very, very capable. So they go there, help Vishwamitra, and then they kill the demons, and so that their sacrificial rites can go on smoothly. And so they kept doing that, you know. They would have to go there often as they were growing up and do this, you know, this job of sending those demons away or those bad guys away. And finally they grew up, and then at one time, you know, while they were there, they were told by Vishwamitra that, look, this king, neighboring king, the kingdom's name was Mithila, and the name of the king was Janak. Okay, Janak. So that this Janak guy, he has a daughter, okay, and she has to pick a husband. Alright, so she's having a ceremony where she will pick a husband. Alright, and in those days it was a custom that, you know, they will keep some condition as to whoever that fulfills that condition, he would become the husband for that girl. Alright, so Vishwamitra convinces them to go there and try their luck. And the condition there was, as you know, the condition was, you remember the condition?
Yeah, well, you wrote it for us, so I already guessed it. They have to be able to pull Shiva's bow.
Shiva's bow, right. So they have to be able to pull and string Shiva's bow. And of course, as you can imagine, everybody came, all the kings, all the brave people from surrounding states and countries, they came, but nobody could do that. And of course, Rama, when he tried it, he was not only able to lift it, but he actually broke it into two pieces. Okay, so obviously then he got to wed Sita, Sita was the name of the princess at that time. And then, you know, they also got Sita's cousins and all to marry the other brothers. So all four of them got married. Okay, so they came back. And so everyone is happy. They all get married. And now, of course, these people are grown up, and Rama, Dasharatha believes that Rama is very capable of taking over the whole kingdom. So, and everybody loves these people, you know, all the people in the entire country, so to say, in the kingdom. They know these people. They know, they love Rama and all that. And when the announcement was made that Rama will be coronated as the king, everyone was very, very delighted, very happy. Okay, so preparations were going on, and then suddenly this whole episode of Kaikeyi, you know that episode, right, everyone? Know that episode? What happens at that point? No?
I don't remember
that part. Okay, that's the most important part of the whole story. No. One of the most important. No, the reason is that's what causes all this thing to happen. So, the three wives that were there, that he had, Dasharatha, they were all very, very loving and very devoted wives, so to say, devoted to Dasharatha. So, this middle wife, Kaikeyi, what happened was many, many years ago, they were fighting a war somewhere. And, you know, this guy's hand or whatever, some part of the body, upper part of the body, got stuck under a chariot's wheel. Okay, and he was unable to move, and if he had stayed there without anything, he would have probably been captured or killed by the enemy. And at that point, for some reason, this Kaikeyi was with him. And then she was able to somehow manage to lift that wheel up so he could come out. And then she saved his life basically. And because he was so happy that she saved his life, he said, you know, ask me anything, I'll give it to you. Ask me two boons, in fact. All right. So she says, look, I'm very happy as your wife. I don't need anything. So, you know, just let it go. I'll keep these boons if I need any time later in the future. Okay. So she said, what do I need for? You know, I'm very happy being what I am. So that's okay. But now this woman, Kaikeyi, had a maidservant. Her name was Manthara. Okay. And this woman was really one of the most corrupt women, you know, in the sense that she knew of that boon, that this Kaikeyi had two boons. So she said, look, Rama is being coronated. Your son, Bharat, is a very capable guy. You know, why do you want Rama to become the king? You should have your son as the king. She said, no, I'm happy. You know, Rama is the most capable, he's the eldest. That's this tradition of this land, so it's okay by me. But then she starts poisoning her mind slowly, you know. Over a period of time, she's able to do that successfully. And then the day before the coronation, she says, I want my two boons. So the king says, okay, you know, ask whatever you want. And then she throws this bombshell. Okay. So the first boon, she says, I want my son to be coronated tomorrow, not Rama. And second, I want Rama to go to the forest, live there for many years, 14 years in fact. And of course, Dasharatha was completely crestfallen and completely devastated. But, you know, the way they depict that whole scene, this is where this value, you know, this whole dharma, as it's called, you know, your righteousness.
I didn't quite get that.
No problem. So when this news came to Rama that this is what is happening, the way they depicted in the story is that he was totally 100% unperturbed. Absolutely no reaction. This is where they say that he was realized soul, that nothing absolutely bothered him. He heard that, oh, my father had given a boon and he wants to keep his promise. That's my job. I'll do that. Nothing will change my mind now, and I will make sure that he can keep his promise. So very happily he agrees to go to the forest. Whereas Dasharatha, he is having fits all over the place. He cannot handle that situation. But then he says, look, you have given a word, and your word of honor is my word of honor, and I'm going to fulfill it. So he decides to go. But then, you know, Lakshman says, if you go, I'm part of you, I'll go. But he says, you are married and your wife is here. He says, I'll manage my wife. Don't worry about it. You know, I want to go with you. That's my job, wherever you go. And of course, Sita also, you know, she says, I'm your wife, I cannot be separate. He says, you know, but we are going to the forest. You cannot stand that, you know, that life. It's a very, very tough life. She says, if you can live there, I can live there. So they all three have decided now to go to the forest. In the meantime, it just so happened that Bharat was visiting his uncle. He was not in town. Right? So he had no clue as to what, you know, all this is going on. And when he came back from his vacation, so to say, he was devastated completely. In the meantime, these people have already gone to the toward the end of, they have already departed to the forest. Of course, they show that the entire city goes after him for a very, very long time, and everyone is completely, you know, sad, and they cannot hold themselves. So, but then finally Rama is able to convince them to go back and settles down, or at least the first stop is in Dandaka Aranya. The Dandaka is the name of that forest where they go and stay in the first phase of their forest life. So when Bharat comes to know of all this, he decides to go and bring him back. So because he says that Rama is the rightful owner of this throne, it doesn't belong to me. I mean, it's the tradition has been set in this whole chain of kings and kingdoms that it's the eldest son of the king who becomes the heir of the throne. Who am I? So I cannot take it. So he goes there, and of course Rama refuses to come back. He says, I have to keep my father's honor and I have to keep his word. So just go back. So that's where he decides, okay, but he says, give me your sandals. So he takes Rama's sandals and puts them on the throne as his representative. And he says, because my brother is living in a forest, I'm not going to live in this palace. So he lives outside the city in a small hut. And from there, he conducts the entire affairs of this whole kingdom. While on the throne, it's Rama's sandals who are sitting there. That's it. As a representative of Rama. So these things are, you have to read that whole story in its original form where it comes out so beautifully. And when you hear these, stories and people are able to describe the emotion in it, if you go to any of these sessions in India, you will see 90% of the people have tears in their eyes. 90% of the people. And I've seen that, it's just so moving and fascinating how these people are able to bring that emotion out. Beautiful. So Bharat decides to live outside the city, and then he says, I am not going to be anywhere near the palace until my brother comes back. But then, you know, life goes on. I mean, they go to the forest, and from there, you know, the scene moves to the forest life of Rama and all these, you know, these three people. So this is where they have now finally settled in one place. They have made a hut for themselves, and, you know, they are leading the life of an ascetic. You know, they used to wear these clothes made of tree bark, you know. It's called valkala. That's very common in those days. So they make clothes made out of tree bark, and that's what they were wearing, all of them, all the time. All these sages, everyone wears that, or used to at least. Okay, it's called valkala. So they all did that. And they settle down. Every now and then, if there is any disturbance caused by these demons or any of these bad guys to these sages who are living nearby, so they would go and fight. Even though they took the vow to live the life of an ascetic, but because they belong to this warrior class, okay, so they did not leave that, you know, that behind. So they become kind of dual life, basically, the life of an ascetic as well as the life of the warrior class whenever it was needed in that forest, right? So they would go and fight these demons and get rid of them so that the rituals can go on. And it was, you know, everybody lived there, all the bad guys, good guys, everyone, of course, they all lived there. So one day this woman, her name is Shurpanakha, and she happens to be Ravana's sister, actually, but she was living in that same area. And she comes by and then sees these two people, and she's really fascinated by their beauty and, you know, etc. And she wants to marry one of them. So she says, I want to marry you. She tells Rama. He says, but I'm already married. He says, no, it doesn't matter. Kings have more than one wife. Marry me. It's okay. No, but he has no interest. I mean, he has other plans in mind, you know. So she keeps insisting, and finally Lakshmana also gets involved, and he says, if you don't go away, I'm going to disfigure you. So he cuts off her nose and ear and all the ears. So she gets very, very upset, very upset. And she had these two of her cousins living nearby, you know, so she goes and calls them up, and they come back with a big battalion of army to fight with these people. Of course, Rama is able to, obviously, he's able to kill them off, you know, and push them back, so... So these two, Khara and Dushana, they are the cousins of Shurpanakha. So they are killed, etc. But now she gets very, very angry, obviously, and then she goes and reports to Ravana, her brother, that, look, this is what happened. This is what they have done to me. I want revenge. All right? I want you to go and take away Sita from this woman, from this guy. Right. So, of course, Ravana is depicted as extremely a capable guy. Okay, he has two faces basically. One, he is one of the most learned people. He has studied everything that you can think of, studied all the Vedas, all the Puranas, everything, and he's extremely knowledgeable, very, very capable. And in his earlier days, he had done some huge duration of these meditative, you know, ritual. And he got a boon also in that process because he was so genuine in his approach. So his boon was Do you remember his boon? What the boon he got in that whole process? That he cannot be killed by anybody, by no god, by no human being, etc., etc. There is some, specifics there, but the only way he can be killed is because they said if he can be struck in his navel, that's the only way he can be killed. Otherwise, nobody can touch him. Nobody can kill him. But he was considered to be a very capable guy otherwise. The only drawback he had was he was a very corrupted mind. Okay? Otherwise, he was considered to be one of the best guys. You know? So, he decides to take revenge because his sister was disgraced by these two princes. Right? Now, how do you do that? So he had a plan. These people, because they had so much, they had done so much of meditation and rituals, etc., they all had extra powers. All of them had extra powers. Okay? Super normal powers, every one of them. So he had super normal powers, his brothers and sons, they all had super normal powers to some extent. Okay? So he said, okay, one of his nephews was Maricha. Okay, he was the guy. They said, okay, Maricha, because you have a boon, you can change your shape and form at will. So I want you to become a golden deer and go near Sita so she is fascinated by you. And then you run away and then she will have to ask Rama to kill you so that she can get you. He was also kind of hesitant in the beginning, but he said, okay, since you are my relative, I'll do that for you. So this is the story of this whole episode where this golden deer comes near the hut, their place of residence. And then obviously Sita wants that deer because she loves that golden deer. It's very beautiful. Rama first, of course, he doesn't want to leave her alone. But then she insists absolutely that I absolutely want it. And so Rama tells Lakshmana that, look, I'm going after the deer, but I absolutely warn you not to leave this place. Absolutely, 100%. You're not supposed to leave Sita behind alone. All right? So Rama goes after the deer, right? And then the deer is obviously, he is very agile and fast moving, so he runs away fast, but then at some point Rama is able to kill him or put an arrow in him, right? Strikes him with an arrow. So while he is dying, he is able to imitate the voice of Rama, right? And in Rama's voice, he's shouting, save me, please save me, save me, save me, etc. And loud enough so that Sita hears that. All right, so now Sita obviously thinks that Rama is in big trouble. So she says, Lakshmana, go and save Rama now. Rama is in big trouble. Right? Lakshmana says, I cannot do that. I have strict orders from my brother and your husband that I should not leave you. But then she says, do you want your brother to die? What's the purpose of your life then? Or what's the purpose of my life then? So, the whole story goes on, right? And then she has to. So he says, okay, if you absolutely must insist, I'll go. He recognized it's some kind of a ruse. It's not, it's a plot. He knew that. But Sita was not willing to listen to him. So then he uses his magical powers. He says, okay, so wherever you are, you stay there. I'm going to draw a circle around you. Okay? All right? And that circle is a magical circle. Okay? Nobody can step inside that circle, and you will not go outside the circle. All right? Because I don't want you to be hurt by anybody. All right? So as long as you stay within this circle, nobody can hurt you. Get the whole idea? All right, so now, you know, Lakshmana also goes in search of Rama. Now she's alone. In the meantime, this guy Ravana, that was his plot, that both the men will go away and he will come in the disguise of an ascetic, looking for alms, looking for some food. This is what they did, right? They will go from place to place, look for food. So he comes in the shape, in this form of an ascetic, and asks for food. She says, okay, I'll get it, get the food. She gets the food, and then she says, I'm going to leave it here. She says, are you crazy? Have you ever heard anybody giving a food to an ascetic and you just leave it at some place? You have to give it in your hands, with your hands. Right? But she says, I'm not going to come out of this circle. That's my you know, guideline. I'm not going to come out of it. He says, I cannot do that. I cannot come in. You have to come out of the house and then only give the alms to the ascetic. Right? Now, all this plot worked because it is considered absolutely against dharma to let an ascetic go without giving the food. It's considered totally it's adharma. Adharma means it's contrary to dharma. You're not supposed to do that. Okay? So she was also bound by her own dharma. She said, okay, since you know I have to feed you, you are wandering ascetic. So she steps out of that circle. And that's it. That's the time he is able to grab her and take her away. Right? And again, you know, these people had these chariots which could fly and all that, you know, in those days. So he puts her in his lap, takes her in their chariot, and then takes away. Now, while they are going, she's crying, obviously, please help, please help, 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 etc., etc. Nobody is able to hear her. And then this bird called Jatayu. Okay, Jatayu is a bird, and this bird also happens to be an old friend of Dasharatha, that king. King Dasharatha. Okay, and he's a very respected bird, Jatayu. Very, very respected. So he tries to fight with Ravana, right? He tries to fight with Ravana in order to get Sita out of his grab, right? Now, in the process, you know, Ravana cuts off his wings. So he just falls down and is about to die. And then takes away Sita in the process. Now, obviously when Rama and Lakshmana, they come back, they don't find her there, so they are completely, you know, devastated now what to do. They go in search of her everywhere in the forest. They can't find her. And finally, they come across this bird, Jatayu, who was just about to die. So he is the one who is able to tell them that I saw this guy, Ravana, take Sita in his chariot, in his flying chariot. He didn't know anything more than that. Okay. So now they said, you know, we don't know who this guy is and who took her away, etc. And finally, I think the story is that they meet Jatayu's older brother, who knew who these people were, who Ravana was. So he tells them that, look, this guy is the king of this country called Lanka, and you know, that's where he has taken Sita to Lanka. So now, you know, the whole story revolves around how to get to Lanka and how to fight how to get her back, basically. All right. So, where are we in the story on this? I just kept going. I think we have taken a few pages away. All right. So, so in the process, you know, of the finding and all that, there's they find this guy Kabandha. You know, Kabandha was a he himself had been turned into a monster through a boon or through a curse or some sort, and he had to be killed to relieve him of his curse. And when Rama is able to kill him, he gets out of his curse, and that's when he is able to tell Rama that, look, what you need to do is to make friends with this monkey clan here. Okay, all these monkeys, they have a kingdom of their own, they have the place of their own. They are very capable fighters, they are very capable people, and you need to make friends with them. So he tells them that, look, go there, make friends with them, and that's who will help you in this war eventually, or whatever you need to do to get Sita out of here.